I'm an art historian, and my particular interest is early modern Europe and the intersection of the arts and sciences and astronomy and art. And I think with this interest, it's impossible to pass by Johannes Hevelius. His books are some of the most richly illustrated astronomical books of the 17th century. His book on the moon, Selenographia, has almost 100 illustrations. His Machina Coelestis has 31, well, depending on how you count them, and his Uranographia has 56 illustrations of the constellations. So I think it is not only the quantity, but also the quality of these illustrations that would make anyone interested in how astronomy was illustrated in the 17th century to be interested in Hevelius. And I will show you just a few. Obviously, I can't show you all these illustrations in one talk. And I took out his books in our Stockholm library. The Academy of Sciences has quite a number of his books. And then I went through different Swedish libraries to look at all the titles I could find. And I found signatures of 10 artists, including Hevelius himself, because he also knew how to engrave the copper plate. And it's also possible that there were yet even more artists involved, because some plates are not signed. And one of those artists who were active in his books was Andreas Stech, who also painted this portrait. The portrait was a gift to either Oxford University or the Bodleian Library. I'm not sure about that yet. But it seems to have arrived in 1679, because the Vice Chancellor of Oxford University writes in August 1679 and thanks Hevelius for this picture. This was painted at the summit of Hevelius's career. Look at how self-confident he is looking. His fame was spreading, and we can assume that he wanted to make sure that at such a place of learning, such as Oxford, he wanted to be represented and displayed as one of the great astronomers. It's quite tragic to think that just about a month after the Vice Chancellor wrote his thank you note, Hevelius's observatory burned to the ground, and almost everything was destroyed. Most of his collections, instruments, and so on went up in flames. It's said that afterwards he was broken, although support came from other parts of Europe and he was able to rebuild the observatory, but he didn't live that long after. I will go briefly through Hevelius's biography related to the artist, Andreas Stech. I will talk a little bit about the book illustrations, and then at the end I shall return to the portrait itself. So, Johannes Hevelius was born in 1611 in Gdansk in Poland. He was one of at least 10 children, and his father, Abraham Hevelke, was he had a brewery and also owned a lot of properties. He had 3 brothers, but they died when they were quite young, and 6 sisters, and probably one of them survived until adulthood. And then he went to schools, and he also went to learn Polish. German was his first language. One important teacher was Peter Kruger, who was also an astronomer. He was teacher of mathematics and astronomy. And he gives him private lessons in astronomy. And he also learns about instrument making and working in wood and metal. The technique of engraving and probably also drawing. In 1630, he went by ship to the Netherlands. And there he studied law at the University in Leiden. But he also studied mathematics, optics, and mechanics. In 1631, he went on to London, where he met such persons as James Ussher, John Wallis, and Samuel Hartley. And it's said that he learns a little bit of English, rather bad, I think, but a little bit. In 1632, he went on to Paris, where he met Pierre Garcendi and Ismael Goulion. He went on to Avignon, where he met Athanasius Kircher. He also wanted to go down to Italy and meet Christoph Scheiner and Galileo Galilei, but he was called back to Poland by his parents. So he goes back to Poland in 1635 and works at his father's brewery, and is also starting a political career in Gdansk. He's getting married to a rich merchant's daughter, and he's not doing any astronomy. This first wife, Katarina Rebeszke, it's in one source it's said that she was ill for 24 years. Another source say that she took care of the brewery and all the household affairs while her husband was doing astronomy and his political career, so it's a bit contradictory. And this year also the painter Andreas Stech is born in Stolp, so he is quite younger than Hevelius. In 1639, Hevelius visits his old teacher Kruger, and the teacher dies just a few days after his visit. And it's said that Kruger on his deathbed asks Hevelius to go to do astronomy. And this is when Hevelius really starts to work with his astronomy. He is grinding his own lenses, making his own quadrants, sextants, and sundials, and while his wife is taking care of the brewery. In 1644, he builds an observational tower on top of his house. As you can see, there are three buildings next to each other, and these he connects and builds an observatory on top with a platform where he could have all the telescopes. From the beginning, he had just been observing from a window in his house. On the top floor was also the printing shop where he had all his house his books printed. And soon his father dies and he becomes the sole owner of the brewery. In 1653, the painter Andreas Stech comes to Danzig and he becomes the apprentice of a painter who was already well established here. His name was Adolf Boy, and he had already been involved in Hevelius' illustration of Hevelius' books. And Stech marries the widowed daughter of the painter Adolf Boy. And those two painters are, one could say, the main painters in Danzig at this time. They get most of the main commissions of churches and public buildings. In 1662, Hevelius' wife dies, and they have no children. And a year after, Hevelius remarries a young girl, Katarina Elisabetta Kaufmann, who is only 16 years old. He is 36 years older. And she is also becoming an astronomer, as well as her husband. They get three daughters who grow up, and they get one son, but he dies. And at this year, he also starts to get stipends from Louis XIV. Friend France had political interests in this area, and it was probably part of strengthening the French popularity in this area. In 1664, he becomes a member of the Royal Society, and in 1674, he is now having a controversy with Robert Hooke, whether you should have telescope sights on your measuring instruments. And if you were here last Saturday, you might have heard Jim Bennett speak about this. In 1678, his observatory is visited by the Polish king, Jan Sobieski III, and he now gets a yearly stipend of 1,000 Danzig gulden for the rest of his life. And he also gets certain tax exemptions. In 1679, Halley arrives in Danzig. So you have an English astronomer, Inge Dansk, observing together with him for from the end of May until the middle of July. And then, just in September the same year, the observatory catches fire while Hevelius is outside the city. He lost almost all his instruments, his library, and the observatory. Fortunately, he gets some support from different parts of Europe. And 2 years later, the new observatory is said to be ready. In 1687, Hevelius dies after having been ill for 12 weeks. And the painter lives on for yet a few years until 1697. I'd just like to show you these pictures, a little bit enlarged. Here you can see his three houses. Maybe the details here are too small, but the little door to the right has a crane on it, and it was supposed to be part of his coat of arms, which you can see in some of his also decorative elements of the books. You can see the observatory is possible to open on the top. And here you can see the observational towers with doors possible to open with quadrants and sextants inside. This is a platform for observing with the large telescopes. Yes, one of his role, or perhaps the most important role model, was Tycho Brahe. If you go to the Bodleian's exhibition of their treasures, you can see Tycho Brahe's great book of instruments is displayed there right now. But this idea of Ven on the island outside Denmark lived on throughout the 17th century, although Tycho Brahe had left this island already at the end of the 16th century. So this place was in ruin, but still in 1662, Lau made this huge atlas, and for several pages you can see his observatory and his instruments as this dream place for astronomy, and I think that Hevelius was quite inspired by him. And Tycho had this wonderful house with towers which could be opened up with instruments inside, and also a subterranean observatory with a platform for observing on top. This is the title page of Hevelius's first larger book on the moon, Selenographia. And these title pages are all very nicely decorated. And what you can see here, well, this book is about the moon, as the title says. Selene is the goddess of the moon. And what you can see here to the left is Alhazen, and to the right, Galileo. It's also inscribed below. Alhazen was an authority on optics who died in about 1039, and Galileo was a 17th century astronomer, so you find one a little bit older and one newer there with a telescope, although Galileo is clothed in some ancient toga or turban. I will not go in too much to this. I just say he dedicated the book to his hometown, Gdansk, and you can see the coat of arms of Gdansk there, and also a view of the city. Then below these men here, you can see this is a skull, and it says Rationer, so it's the brain, astronomer should work with his mind, obviously, and the eye with his sensus below. And below you have, above you have Urania with a telescope. This is now the design of Adolf Boy, who the painter Stech, he married his daughter, so they're all related. And soon Stech also gets into working for Hevelius. This book on the moon contains almost 100 illustrations, and about 60 are on the moon, but it also contains other things. This is engraved by Hevelius himself. A great many are signed by him. Here's another example where you can also see the libration of the moon, that you sometimes see the back of the moon. Those are the circles that you can see here. And this is also a kind of volvelle that you can turn. This is a loose piece of paper that you can turn around, and then a thread so that you can read on the moon. It also contains this beautiful fold-out pages of the moon. And it says that it is Hevelius who has engraved it, but to be honest, I doubt that he made the little putti, the angels there, but I will speak more about that later on. He also included this quite intriguing image of the moon, which makes it look rather like the Earth. He also had names of features on the moon, like Sicily, Etna, Persia, Egypt, and so on. And he imagined that there might be selenitae, animals and plants inhabiting the moon, quite different from the inhabitants of Earth. This system of naming the moon did not win in the long run, so it was the Italian Jesuit Giambattista Riccioli who a few years later published a moon map where you have the names of famous persons, living and dead ones, and that system won acceptance. Although some of Hevelius's names still live on, but for features that they have moved their spaces from where he originally intended them. He also engraved this picture, and here you can see different images of Saturn, the three on the top. On top, such as Galileo imagined them as a planet with two satellites on the side, or with these handles, and that's similar also to what Hevelius thought he saw. And then it's Mars and Jupiter. This is before Huygens proposed that you have the solid rings. The faces of Venus is also in this book. He also includes the Copernican system. He was a Copernican, and that was signed by himself. But also in this book you find some illustrations that are not signed at all. And we can, of course, ask ourselves, what does it mean that an illustration is signed or not? One thing is, of course, to show to the person reading the book who made it. But it could, of course, also be because of economical reasons. For example, who owns the plate or who has paid for it. At least we know for the Plantin printing press in Antwerp, and of course it's not certain that it is the same, that when it concerned a specific artist, that when he wrote Sculpsit, that is sculpted, it meant that the artist had made it himself, but when he wrote Excudit, or Executed, an apprentice had made it after his prototype. So it can be a bit tricky what these signatures really mean. I think that there were probably a number of people helping Hevelius in his printing room and where they made the engravings, but we don't know their names. Or maybe he did some of it himself and in cooperation with others. And this is, for example, a camera obscura, a room for observing the sun, so you can draw the spots of the sun there. And this is a lathe. He also tells how to grind lenses. Or an instrument, a polemoscope, that he's here showing. And here you have, I try to enlarge a little bit, the small putto that are around this large moon. And they are very beautifully engraved. But if we now compare to one of the maps of the constellations that Hevelius himself made, I think you will probably agree with me that his way of making bodies is perhaps not very accomplished. The reason why it's dotted like this is probably because there were maps of the constellations, for example, Bayer from 1603, where the constellations were made like this. But there is a letter saying that he once engraved the frontispiece for Athanasius Kircher's, one of his books, and this is what it looked like. But he never engraved any frontispiece or title page for his own books. So this he must have made when he was young in Avignon, but he preferred to have artists to do the illustrations in his own books. Here you can see one of the details. And just to explain a little bit about the method of engraving, here you can see a young boy drawing in reverse from a drawing. And an older man engraving the copper plate. And in the middle, a man is heating the copper plate. And then behind, they're first putting the ink on top of the copper plate and removing the superfluous ink. And then putting the plate in the press with a moist paper on top. And then they're hanging the engravings to dry in the wall. So perhaps something like this, probably a bit smaller, you would find it at the top of Hevelius's house. In 1668, Hevelius published this book on comets, and that's the first time that Andreas Stech, the painter of the portrait, came to work for Hevelius. And he has here portrayed Hevelius sitting, well, this book is on comets, and he is here sitting between Aristotle and his system of comets, where they're just moving around the sun with their tails pointing in any direction, and Kepler to the right, where the comets are moving in a straight line and their tails always pointing away from the sun, and himself with comets moving in a parabolic path. And these are some illustrations of the comets, as he observed. He also took note of earlier comets. This was an ambitious project to make a catalogue of all known comets in history, so he took different types. But he was himself not very interested in the kind of views that, eschatological views, that the doom of the world, or penitence, and so on. His next great work, where Andreas Stech made a great number of illustrations, was the Machina Coelestis. But strangely enough, Stech was not given the commission of this frontispiece, but it was his father-in-law, Adolf Boy, who did it. The engraver here, whose name was Falk, is said to have that his work is not known after 1666, so it's possible that this was made earlier, or just that the engraver actually worked on, because this was published in 1673. Yes, maybe I should just mention to you, this is actually described, the motive of this frontispiece is described in several pages, so I can't go into to every detail, but it's two astronomers from antiquity in the front, and you may recognize Tycho Brahe and Copernicus behind the globe. And every detail is very well described by Hevelius himself, so he was obviously into this kind of illustration. Andreas Stech illustrated many illustrations. For example, this vignette with a great number of instruments. It's really a lot of instruments, and we may perhaps consider just the economical worth of all these instruments, and if Hevelius even had that many instruments in his house. But this represents quite a lot of money, I would say. But it's also, as a beautiful still life, these instruments are also beautiful. And here you can see some of his instruments. So it's Hevelius himself sitting here and observing, and these are designed then by Andreas Stech, our painter. Considering how many instruments he drew, it's quite obvious that he learned what these instruments look like, and this close collaboration with Hevelius. Here you see Hevelius with a quadrant and quite a number of clocks. Here is Hevelius with his wife. She was reputedly very beautiful. And here is a tower on the top. This was supposed to be revolving. And he writes in his book that you should have a storage beneath your tower where you can keep all your instruments. You can easily take them out. But it must be possible to close it. Otherwise, if it's dark and if you're walking around there when you observe them, you might yourself fall in. He wanted to make really large, long telescopes in order to get a clearer image because of chromatic aberration. In order to get a clear image, you needed to place the lenses very far from each other at this time. So he writes, this telescope was 150 feet long, and he had some land outside Gdansk, and there he placed this, and it was too heavy to place on the top of his house. But it's difficult to know whether we are to see these as documentary images, or perhaps they are a bit enhanced in their beauty or the people coming there, etc. Perhaps the artist bettered it a little bit. And it's sometimes, when you read what he writes, a little bit difficult to know whether he actually had this or whether he's describing what is possible. So perhaps we should be a bit careful when we look at these images. He was also an instrument maker and wanted to sell instruments and wanting to have commissions, of course. It's one of the illustrations which is not signed. The other one was designed by Stech. This is also signed by Stech. And you see here Hevelius using instrument this way, and then in the next picture, the same instrument in another way. And he motivates the illustrations by writing that they easily demonstrate which would otherwise lengthily have to be explained. And Andreas Stech also makes these kinds of illustrations, for example, a microscope. So what other kinds of things did Andreas Stech do in terms of illustrations? He was, for example, doing this for a botanist called Brain, also in Gdansk. He was also a wealthy merchant. He also engraved himself at his own house. He had his own printing press. And he had the same types of artists, the same artists have signed in his books, but it was botany instead. Andreas Stech continued to illustrate books also after Hevelius' death. It's difficult to know how much of the books that were published after Hevelius's death that were actually done, how much of the work was done by Hevelius himself. But it's also possible that his wife did quite a lot of the work. Prodromus Astronomia is a catalogue of 1,564 stars. And this frontispiece was also designed by Andreas Stech. And here you see in the middle Urania, goddess or muse of astronomy, and Hevelius is on the far left. There is also the prince of Hessen-Kassel, Ulugh Beg, and then to the right of Urania, it's Ptolemy, Tycho Brahe, and Riccioli. And this is probably how Hevelius wanted to be perceived, as one of those in this group here. But this is really the dead man among the famous astronomers. And Uranographia, which holds the illustrations to this catalogue, and it contains 56 star charts, all illustrated by Andreas Stech. And here it's more or less the same kind of idea with Urania in the middle. Around her are the planetary children. Each of those have a symbol of one of the planets. The famous astronomers. And Hevelius here is bowing in front. Below is the city of Gdansk. So it's all taking imaginary place above the city of Gdansk. Behind him are some of the constellations in the heavens that he put there. For example, the Canis Venatici, the hunting dogs, the lizard, the small lion, lynx, and in his hand he has the scutum, the shield, which he dedicated to the Polish king, most important constellation. Yes, and inside the book, Andreas Stech illustrated. It said that he painted or drew all the constellations, but it's only this one dedicated to the Polish king, which is actually signed. I don't think the drawings have ever been located. Ah, yes. Those are dedication to the king. The small vignettes. This was when he was receiving grants from Louis XIV. We see that it's a crown and money is raining down. On top you can see the French lily, and it's also French money raining down there. But when he changed his patron, they took the same copper plate, but they erased the lily and the French money. And so that was one of the good things of having your own printing shop. You could actually use the copper plates and just adjust them to your needs. But now, back to the portrait. I just read an account from 1780 where a German came to the Bodleian Library, and he was shown around by a librarian. When they came to this portrait, the librarian took off his hat and said, "There you can see your great compatriot." So one may think a little bit about the role of those portraits. In this case, it made this person feel welcome, and that his compatriot was also there among the great scientists. As we heard initially, this portrait was recently exhibited in Gdansk to commemorate Hevelius's 400th birthday. There is in Gdansk a similar portrait to this one, and as I understand, it has been a discussion there who was the painter of these portraits, because the one in Gdansk seems to be painted by another painter, Andreas Schulz, whose style of painting is supposed to be very similar to Andreas Stech. I'm not going to go into any style discussions, that's not my strength, but this portrait is signed by Andreas Stech. The signature is there, I was just showing it, so I think it's no question to doubt that he actually did it. It has also been asked which of these portraits was the first one, and already in 1976, Teresa Grzybowska suggested that the one in Gdansk was a copy of this painting because she said this is more detailed, for example, on the globe. It's possible that they are both copies of some third original because Vilnius's observatory was destroyed and people might have also been disappeared later. In the thank you letter from the Vice Chancellor Timothy Holton, written on the 20th of August in 1679, he thanks for this portrait. And he also thanks for something else. I was just this afternoon looking at copies of the Bodleian of Machina Coelestis, of the second part, which is a very rare book because most of the copies were destroyed in the fire. And he has signed himself that this is for the Bodleian Library. So that might have been the other gift that the Vice Chancellor was referring to. And also the first volume, but that was dated 1673, was dedicated to the Bodleian Library. And I think Dana Josefsson has also seen copies of works that were given by Hevelius to the library. So it seems he had a tradition of giving books to the Bodleian Library. For some reason, it must have been important for him that this library held his books. And why would he give this portrait to books and portrait to the Bodleian Library and Oxford University? It's possible that Edmund Halley, when he was there, that he took the portrait with him back. We don't know, but it's a possibility. Maybe it's also some memory of his visits here in the 1630s. What is it that makes a portrait successful? Well, it does have to have some similarity with the depicted person. But it should also be a little bit idealized. It should remove such things that are not important. And this idealization should not just make the person more beautiful, but it should perhaps clean some certain traits. The person should be possible to recognize, and he should also be typical for what he is. Of course, we don't know what Hevelius looked like in real life, so we can't say whether it's similar to his person, but he must have thought that it was good enough to be sent abroad anyway, as a gift. If we look at his clothes, he has quite a luxurious coat. Perhaps it's too dark for you to see. He has a scarf which is quite loose around his neck, not too strict. Perhaps it gives us the impression that this is a private encounter, although it's, of course, very staged. And he is also seen just in the middle of his work with his pen in front of him. It's also communicating to us, looking straight at the beholder. He has a small chain around his neck. This is possibly for clasping his cloak. I don't know if anybody has any other idea. Please tell me. There is a bookcase behind him. It's not very specific, but we may think that this is in his library. It's also a bust and a statue of a horse, so perhaps it's indicated this is his cabinet and his collections with things. Could the horse have any specific meaning? Well, It's possible. For example, in the frontispiece to Machina Coelestis, he describes the horse as being fearless, patient, not afraid of labor, and an investigator of the stars should not spare himself any labor or sweat. But it could just indicate his library and collection. He does write in his books about his museum, so that could be it. What is he writing? Well, this is, he is having an observational journal. And it is probably this page which was later published in the Machina Coelestis. I couldn't note anything particular about this page. And he, the moon is also drawn, which is sticking out there. And it's probably a copy of this illustration from Selenografia. And he is pointing at the globe. Already, Teresa Gruzbowska noted it was a Blau globe from 1603. And Jim Bennett had the kindness of taking theirs out of the case, and he could compare it outside with the portrait, and it's definitely this globe. But why is he pointing at the constellation of Bootes? Is it accident? Yes, it's possible. But it's also so that two of the constellations that Hevelius named were the Canis Venaticae, which is just left of Bootes, and the Mons Menelae. Could be it, but I don't know. I think it's getting late, so I will just go to my finish and stop with this. This would be my link to the book illustrations, Stech's frontispiece in the Cometografia. This portrait would be, I think, Hevelius thought would be placed among other portraits in the row, so he probably wanted there to be something to recognize him as an astronomer. So you find, for example, the globe, the celestial globe there, and his portrait would then be placed next to other great thinkers, making him one of the great astronomers to be compared with the great thinkers of different eras, such as in this illustration of Aristotle or Kepler. Here he is optimistic at the peak of his career, not yet knowing of the great disaster that the fire would bring to his observatory, self-confident and, as always, hard-working. And now the museum here in Oxford is living up to his wish by commemorating his 400th anniversary. I would like to thank you for letting me join you in this celebration of this, in my view, extraordinarily interesting 17th century astronomer. Thank you.